You're listening to Civic Media. Stay up to date on the latest news and information for your local community and Wisconsin by signing up for our free email newsletter. Visit civicmedia.us/email to get started.
Good morning and welcome to Matinair on Air. Jane Matinair, Greg Mock, and Calvin Butenhoff coming to you live from our studio in downtown Waukesha. You can always join us. Call or text. The number is the same, 855-752-4842. Leave a comment if you're watching on the live stream on Facebook, YouTube, and what used to be Twitter. President Biden is stopping in Milwaukee today, talking about portions of the bipartisan infrastructure law and its focus on getting lead pipes out of Milwaukee. Civic Media news and political teams are following his trip here to Wisconsin. We'll have updates for you throughout the day, and you will hear, I believe, at least a portion of the speech today during the Todd Alba show around 12:30 p.m. So that is coming up a little bit later on. Just keep it right here all day, all the time on Civic Media. Excited to have our colleague and friend Jim Santel in studio with us. Jim is a lawyer, and he also hosts Amicus, a law review every Saturday from 9 to 11. Thank you for coming out and joining us in studio.
Jane, Greg, what a delight once again to be with you on this bright and wonderful Tuesday morning. Some things going on in America and just Wisconsin, right?
Just a couple of things.
A few
just
we can chat about.
Things.
Just a scooch.
A scooch, right.
One of the reasons we wanted to have you in, Jim, because we always say here on Matinair on Air, we are adjacent to a lot of experts. We are not experts, which is why we...
I think you are.
Well, that's why we bring them in. So we're lawyer adjacent, and we wanted an actual lawyer, which you are, to explain Jack Smith's latest filing. And the reason we're coming back to this is because I think Helene pushed so much, it just pushed it out of the news. Right. It landed, it made a stir for a couple of days, and then whoosh, it was gone. The news cycle just turns so quickly.
Yes.
And I still think this latest from Jack Smith is critically important for people to understand the background machinations and how much dirty dealing was going on in the background regarding January 6th, Donald Trump's loss, because he did lose the election in 2020, and the vast number of people involved in pushing this lie.
Absolutely, Jane, and you're right. It's been pushed out of the news by, obviously, tragedy there in the southeastern portion of our nation. But nonetheless, I think you're absolutely right. One of the most significant pleadings to be filed in all of these cases this year, and because we're not going to get a trial in this matter, it's as close as we're going to come in 2024 to having a real trial. What you basically have here is Jack Smith, again, representing the government, the U.S. Department of Justice, is prosecuting this four-count case. It is a criminal indictment alleging that Donald Trump basically tried to undermine, to overthrow, if you will, the results of the 2020 election. We know that well. And along the way, raising this issue that he is immune from prosecution.
Thank you, Supreme Court.
Yes, right. And to that very good point, Jane, we've got this, I will say, I believe that it is not only contrary to 238 years of our history, but basically amends the Constitution and reestablishes how it is we understand our branches of government by saying, you know what, now you have this extraordinarily powerful executive, never envisioned by our founding fathers. That person now can commit crimes, engage in criminal conduct. With respect to the Department of Justice, absolute immunity. You can pick up the phone and call your attorney general and tell him or her to engage in obstruction of justice, other things. Again, Richard Nixon's presidency would be resurrected by what the Supreme Court has said. So you've got that opinion. And so what we now have is Jack Smith living in the wake of that. He does two important things, and you and Greg and I have talked about this before. He does two things. One is he goes to the grand jury, a new grand jury, and he files what's basically a superseding indictment. Fancy lawyer way of saying a new indictment. And what does he do? Two principal things. One is he says, you know what? All right, if all the stuff related to Donald Trump's engagement with the Department of Justice, trying to get the Department of Justice through people like Jeffrey Clark and even his acting attorney general to buy into this notion that somehow the 2020 election was stolen, it wasn't, of course. If none of that can be prosecuted, I need to take a Sharpie to the indictment. I need to cross all that out. And he does. So stunningly, again, if listeners are at all thinking about the impact of the Supreme Court, they basically dismissed a portion of the indictment as to Donald Trump. So he does that. And then he also does something else with the language of the indictment. He basically comes back and says, you know what? None of this is official. Let's stop talking about the president being engaged in official conduct. This is personal, private. He talks about his private attorneys, all the private engagements and counsel, none of this having to do with constitutional doctrines. And that's what he follows up in now with his pleading that, again, was just released by the judge, most of it, almost all of it, by Judge Tanya Chutkan. She's the federal district judge presiding over this, and he pursues that in this brief.
The brief is about 176 pages
long. Exactly.
It's not brief.
Well,
it's right? not brief.
Once again, lawyer's language, right?
But it's readable.
It is readable.
And I got up to about 75 pages. Mm-hmm. And thought, well, I've seen enough. Mm-hmm. But I highly encourage folks to read it.
Absolutely.
And take a look at it. It's very, very detailed.
And if I
started keeping a list of who co-conspirator one mm-hmm. was
right.
and then who
right.
I thought it was.
Right.
And then person one and person two and who I thought all those people were.
Right.
And some of them are pretty easily identifiable,
sure.
like Rudy Giuliani and
right.
Steve Bannon.
He's there. They play major roles. You've got Mark Meadows. He's 21, Jane. I suspect
wow.
you and I have the same numbers here. You've got, remember, Jason Miller. He's
oh, yes.
number four, right? Dan Scavino. Remember him?
He
yes.
was
the media
gosh.
Guy, right? Greg, you know that he's number 45. Bill Barr, our former attorney general, is 52. So you've got lots of people who identified basically with some clarity, and they're not just walk-on roles in this brief,
no.
but they plainly indicate there are an awful lot of people who engaged in this conspiracy with Donald Trump. Donald Trump, the singular defendant, but lots of other folks there not charged in this indictment.
Well, and that's something that, you know, when I think of this and you speaking on the manner of like the executive branch becoming more powerful, that is something right up Bill Barr's alley.
Absolutely.
He believes in unified executive theory, and he's the one who pushed this before Donald Trump was ever in office. But what happened was, is Donald Trump is such a spectacular tumbling idiot. He's not the guy you want to be.
No.
For Bill Barr, I should say.
Right.
Bill Barr wants a Bush senior as an executive to push this thing.
Yes.
But the fact that Bill Barr pushed and pushed and pushed, and now it's sort of happening, and Bill Barr's like, no, he like the turn, the 180
yes.
turn from him is one of the most spectacular changes. Because
right.
to me, you'd think he'd just eat this up, but he doesn't.
Right.
But it doesn't mean he's not responsible either.
Absolutely, he does. He does write about this long in advance. Remember, this is Bill Barr's second turn as Attorney General.
Right.
I worked under 9 different attorneys general, both Republicans and Democrats. That did not become a part of our decisions about prosecutions. But Bill Barr was one of those. In his first iteration, an awful lot of people looked at Bill Barr and said, you know what? Kind of an institute. Yes, conservative guy, but an institutionalist. He's going to follow basically the fundamental notions of what the department does, and then comes back in. And to your good point, Greg, just basically not only seizes upon what he's written about before, but goes crazy about it and provides us with the voice piece, which is Donald Trump.
I have so many other things that I would
yes.
like to ask about Bill Barr in particular. And I don't know, the whole Jeffrey Epstein
yes,
thing
right.
and all of the documents that were seized from
mm-hmm.
Epstein's properties. And where did that all stuff
right.
go? Who has all that stuff? That's another issue. We'll have to have you back for that edition.
I will be delighted to come back sometime and talk more about that, too. Right?
Jim Santel is our guest from Amicus, a law review every Saturday from 9 to 11 across the Civic Media Radio Network. And we're talking about Jack Smith's most recent filing in the January 6th obstruction case. From what I gleaned from this, Jim, just days, I mean, like 3 days before the election, they were coming to Donald Trump and saying, look, the projections are not good.
Right.
The projections in certain states, this is not looking good for you. That's when the whole plan started.
Absolutely. Again, he was talking already, obviously, these questions. We're getting them again now in this cycle about whether or not you'd embrace the results, whatever they are. And he was already indicating, not so much. But you're right. It begins even before then as the people are coming to him. And Jane, that's one of the main themes of this brief, too, as you read through it. Again, also commend your listeners to take a look at it. Lots of people coming to him beforehand saying, Mr. President, this does not look good. And significantly, even more significantly, coming going to an afterwards on November 12th, November 16th, December 20th. You've got the Vice President of the United States of America, according to this brief, sitting down three private lunches. And according to Mike Pence, this is probably either a statement he made, maybe not grand jury testimony. He says he gently tries to encourage Donald Trump to accept the results. At one point, Pence suggests that Trump should take a bow and look at the results not as a loss, but just an intermission, run again in 2024. And Trump says, not interested. We're going to go ahead. And then the other piece of this, of course, is we don't care. We don't care what the results are. You've got the Steve Bannons, who's also a player in this, saying, of course he lost. It doesn't matter. We're simply going ahead. We're just going to say he's the winner. Doesn't mean that he is the winner. That's all in this brief. And what does it all go to? It goes to Donald Trump's knowledge that he lost. He's got everybody around him telling him beforehand, afterwards, you lost this, and there's no there. There's nothing to pursue. There's no legitimate intent in trying to undermine this election. Your only purpose is criminal, and it's to remain in power.
And one of the things that, you know, we only have a couple more minutes left right now, but I want to say to that, and this is a thought maybe for the both of you to weigh on it, is that to have that sort of energy around you all the time as you get older, that can't do well for your mental health. When you are surrounded by those kinds of people who are telling you, you won or you lost, it doesn't matter. We got, like, there's no, this is this, what we are seeing right now in as far as his rallies, his interviews, I think is the culmination of 10 years on top of 62 years of a guy who has just never been told no,
right.
A guy who's never had it any other way but his way, and he has, and the cracks are showing.
Right.
And and I don't say that happily. I don't want to see someone fall apart like that. But this immutability towards the election is, I just feel like, is going to be his downfall mentally.
Right. You think about Abraham Lincoln surrounding himself, again, Doris Kearns Goodwin, a team of rivals, right? Yeah. People are going to look at you and say, Mr. President, do this, do that. That's a good leader who's maybe going to decide, no, I'm going to follow that or not accept that. But you want people around you to question what you're doing, to doubt what you're doing. Greg, I think your point cannot be overstated.
Do you want to work for someone who will only accept when you agree with them?
Right.
That seems like a really, really bad way to go forward.
Project 2025.
Yes, it does. We're going to continue our conversation with Jim Santel. Stay close. You're listening to Matt Nair on air, coming to you across the vast and global Civic Media Radio Network. Good morning. Welcome back to Matt Nair on air. Jane Matt Nair, Greg Bach, and the Board Lord coming to you from our studio in downtown Waukesha. You can always join us. Call or text 855-752-4842. Leave a comment if you're watching on the live stream on Facebook, YouTube, and what used to be Twitter. Do you have the Civic Media app yet? You should. We have updated it. There's a new version available. Go to wherever you get your apps and download and update the free Civic Media app. You can listen to all of our stations all across the state. You can call and text directly from the app. There's a whole bunch of cool stuff on there. So if you don't have it yet, I would encourage you to download the Civic Media app.
Right now.
Do it right now. We're going to have more contests coming up, too.
And you can't
text
only...
You can only enter...
Exactly.
On that text.
I mean, Jabba the Musk says... Download the free Civic Media app.
And do it today. Jim Santel is our guest, our friend and colleague from Amicus, a law review. You can hear him every Saturday. I highly encourage you to listen from 9 to 11. It's very, very informative. And Jim is here to talk about this latest filing from Jack Smith regarding the January 6th obstruction case against Donald Trump. And the plan started even before the election was over because the projections were not looking good.
Absolutely.
And at that point, Steve Bannon essentially said, it doesn't matter. We're just going to say we won and deal with it later.
Right.
And then from what I understand from the 70-what pages that I read, was it Kenneth Cheesebro and John Eastman who were the ones who started to cook up this fake elector thing?
Absolutely. And again, remember the memorandum was first called the Wisconsin Memorandum, right?
Right, right. Because that's the Green Bay Suite. The Green Bay Suite.
Right. Right. And so you can tell that they're developing this over time, too. Right. They first articulate this view and it's not completely baked. And then once Eastman gets a hold of it and the attorneys get a hold of it and all the others who are now being disbarred, there's the lesson for you out there.
Yeah.
Right.
Ooh,
right.
That. Right. Ouch. Right. Consequences.
Rudy Giuliani just lost his license in Washington, D.C. Eastman's losing his license in California. All those kinds of things. Then they begin to say, and again, to your point, Greg, before the break, this notion that, well, maybe we do have something here. Let's beef this up. Let's go to Wisconsin. Let's go to Pennsylvania. Let's go to Arizona. Put all these fake electors together. And then we've got this thing moving forward. And it's almost as if they forget that what they're doing is a crime. And what they're trying to do is undermine the election. You've got attorneys doing it. And, of course, Donald Trump is a receptive person in all of this. He's looking around and he's got himself surrounded by these folks. And he's saying, yeah, let's do exactly what they have told me. These are my lawyers. They must be right.
And I don't want to go to jail.
Right? Precisely. Nor do I want. Right? Precisely. And I also want to stay in the presidency here. And I will do that. And you're right, Jane. After that, what happens is to the good in this memorandum, again, you've read it and Greg's read it as well. You do have people. There's a fellow named Eric Hirschman. Interestingly, he is a lawyer.
Yeah.
He meets with Donald Trump. Through his a childhood friend, Jared Kushner introduces them. He's the connection.
Nice.
How nice
how
is
cozy.
That?
Wow. Right? How cozy.
So again, and maybe this is the one of perhaps many times that a connection there does something good. Hirschman is apparently one of the heroes in this. He's person number 9, if you want to identify this along the way. He starts working in the White House in August of 2020, and he is one who very early on says, you know what? The unvarnished truth, he says, is that you lost the election. There's nothing here. These claims of fraud that we are beginning to articulate through fake electors, other folks out there, they are completely false. He goes on to say, I'm not going to use the language here. He warns Trump at one point that he brings these into court. We will get slaughtered because they're all, and I'm going to substitute the word, junk or untrue. There's another much more colorful word that I'm not going to say on the airwaves today. But basically says, Mr. President, there's nothing here.
This is bogus.
This is bogus. Yeah. This is bogus. And again, all this follows in the wake of that. You do have people. And that, too, the reason it's important at trial is it going to be important that to establish that Donald Trump was hearing from people who were telling him that what he was believing or not believing, actually, that there was no there. That's important. It establishes criminal intent. That's the reason why it's so important.
I have a side question regarding the fake electors in Wisconsin, and I feel like I saw something, but I haven't heard anything in the news as of late. Has Josh Call decided to press charges against these individuals? Because I feel like of all the states,
right,
we were the only ones who the fake electors were sort of. They were not only getting up, they were keeping their jobs, getting new jobs.
Jim Troop is still, right?
Exactly.
Dan, what's his? He's still on the election commission.
Elections commission.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. So what you have here, and I've been critical of our attorney general as well for just this reason. What the attorney general Josh Call did here is he has charged what's called the architects of the scheme, right? The Cheesemans and those folks who put it together. The people who actually had in front of them a document that said, "I am an elector." And I'm going to sign this document to tell people in Washington, D.C. that that's who I am. None of those people has been charged, unlike other states out there in Nevada and in Georgia and in Arizona, other places. And I think that is a fault in our justice system, that they have not been brought to trial. Brought to justice, if you will. If you're presented with a document and even a lawyer says to you, hey, Jane, Greg, sign this. Just sign
trust
it.
Me. Just trust me,
right? Are you going to do that? The answer is no.
Well, that was
not,
that right? was the thing is Andrew Hitt tried to present it like we didn't know what was going to happen to us. I understand the general fear because the supporters are rabid. But you have a higher duty.
Absolutely.
And that duty is to serve your state, serve your country, protect the Constitution. And they didn't do that. And to come back and say, we were afraid of what to do. You go to a cop, you go to another lawyer, right, you go to somebody. Right. You don't just sign in and go, whoo, nothing will come of this.
And then come back and say, we were tricked.
We were tricked. And unlike in other states where there is some conditional language in those documents that say, well, we're not going to use this. In Wisconsin's, those things that they signed by our fake electors did not have that language. This was an unequivocal statement. I am an elector. Donald Trump won in Wisconsin. Tough to justify that as anyone who's over the age of 14 years old, right?
I wish we had more time. We could do a whole 20 minutes just on Kraken Lady Sidney Powell and her and right, bringing her in. We will put the filing, this brief, it's in our show notes. It's only 176 pages long. I know it sounds like a lot, but you can get through it. It's really important that we talk about this and keep this in the news.
It is. And again, it's the outline to establish that even though the Supreme Court has said you're immune, the reality is, in this case, nothing to prevent the trial from going ahead.
Jim Santel from Amicus, a law review every Saturday, 9 to 11 on Civic Media. Check it out. It's a wonderful, wonderful show. News is coming up next. Stay with us. You're listening to Matt Nair on Air on the Civic Media Radio Network.
You're listening to Civic Media. Find the latest news, information, and archives of all your favorite shows on the Civic Media website, civicmedia.us.
I just don't know what to do with myself. Good morning. Welcome back to Matt Nair on Air. Jane Matt Nair, Greg Bach, and Dr. Slide on the board, coming to you from our studio in downtown Waukesha. You can always join us. Call, text, number is the same, 855-752-4842. Leave a comment if you're watching on the live stream on Facebook, YouTube, and the platform that Jabba the Musk continues to actively ruin. Very nice to have Jim Santel, our friend and colleague, in studio with us. We're going to have him back in the next couple of weeks. There's so much to talk about.
We had Earl on.
I know.
Jim on.
It's been a jam-packed show.
If you're listening right now, like, oh, I missed them. You didn't miss them. You can listen to it. You can go to civicmedia.us and download our show as a podcast and listen or listen again.
You can listen again. You can check the show notes.
You can check the show notes.
You can check the show notes.
Which are some of the finest curated show notes in history, let me tell you.
If Greg says so himself.
I mean, the guy who does them works so hard.
But there's a lot of links in there,
yes,
to things that we talk about and guests that we have on the show. So I would highly encourage you to check it out at civicmedia.us. And just a reminder as well, we started the show talking about Eric Hovde lying about what's going on in North Carolina as far as FEMA and disaster aid reaching people. Yes, FEMA is on the ground. Yes, the National Guard is on the ground. They are lying. Don't believe them.
Earlier in the show, Jeff Jackson.
My whole point was Civic Media, civicmedia.us/help. We have links. That's where I was going. Who am I? Who are you?
You were just getting off into Jane land where it's
where
like you get frustrated with the idiots who are in charge saying dumb things. And we're bringing it back to civicmedia.us/help.
There are links there to World Central Kitchen. They're on the ground.
Mm-hmm.
Samaritan's Purse is on the ground. Red Cross is there on the ground. And I saw someone put something in the live stream that mentioned that FEMA's job is not to remove debris. FEMA's job when they're on the ground is to provide financial assistance and further financial assistance. There are other agencies that are handling the cleanup and the debris and all of that stuff and handing out food and water and all of those things. FEMA is there so people can get $750 immediately, immediately. So that's not all they're getting, which, again, Donald Trump and his supporters are claiming, oh, all they're getting is $750 and they've lost everything in the world. That's not accurate. They get $750 immediately for immediate concerns and then can file for further financial assistance. So civicmedia.us/help if you would like to make a donation or otherwise go donate blood, please.
And Melissa came in a point yesterday when we were speaking to her, and she said one of the things they need are can openers. Never would have thought of that.
I never would have thought of that either.
Yep.
But go to an agency that you trust.
Correct.
Please don't. If your cousin's sister's cousin's neighbor's friend sends you a link for some super PAC that says that they're going to be supporting victims, I would ask you to question the validity of that organization. It's tragically when we have disasters like this that all kinds of scammers show up.
Hey,
and it's an easy way to make money on people's tragedy.
If a guy who he and his family aren't allowed to run a charity in New York, don't go to his GoFundMe page for victims.
Yeah.
Go to vetted groups, or if it's your church group or whatever, as long as you know the money or the aid is getting directly there, that's what you should
be good
do.
To go.
I had a point. I lost it. Now I'm in the... Oh, we were talking earlier about North Carolina Congressman Jeff Jackson,
yes.
His response to all the mis and disinformation happening right now. That whole speech from him will be in the show notes.
It's worth listening
to. From the first hour, because he addresses it directly, but also with a pinch of frustration, because there are things he is saying that he feels he doesn't have to say, because they're conspiracy theories, folks. Conspiracy theories.
We shouldn't have to tell people that, no, the government doesn't direct the weather. That's not a thing.
And those people shouldn't be elected officials.
I would agree with you on that. Brittany Merlot, who is actually a meteorologist.
Whoa.
Is going to be joining us tomorrow.
Yeah.
And we can talk about space lasers controlling the whatever. I'm sure she will laugh or cry.
Or she'll say, I'd do that. I'd play with those. Because she's got a much more exciting life than you and I, folks. Yeah. There are times when this country can come together. And it used to be disasters. You know,
times of crisis.
The pictures of 9/11 where people are just together. Pictures from Katrina where people are just together. Now we have two major hurricanes in a week.
Yeah.
And we're divided?
Yeah, because Hurricane Milton is going to slam into the western coast of Florida probably by tomorrow night. And they're talking about 15-foot storm surges. Helene's storm surge was 10 feet. Now we're talking about 15 feet of water. That is up to people's roofs.
Yeah.
In many cases. This is going to be a very dangerous storm. And it's just going to compound, unfortunately, some of the problems that these areas are already seeing. But if you would like to help, there are ways to help. civicmedia.us/help.
Yeah.
Switching gears just a little bit, we're going to wrap up the show on a lighter note with "This Shouldn't Be a Thing." And if you have a thing that should not be, you can email it to janesays@civicmedia.us. We'd love to hear it. JaneSays, janesays@civicmedia.us. But I saw this in the Cap Times today, which is a wonderful publication by Natalie Yar. Culver's co-founder opposes trading out workers for screens for now. Craig Culver, co-founder, was at the Cap Times Power Hour last week, featuring the heads of major Wisconsin companies. And he said that we don't want to replace actual humans with robots right now.
Yeah.
While the standard business wisdom says the customer is always king, he says his customers are very darn important. I learned a long time ago the most important people in our business are our team members.
Yes.
If they know that, I believe they'll take care of the guests like my mom was taking care of them. If we treat them with that honesty, that respect, that care, they will take care of our guests as they should be taken care of. Replacing those workers with machines would fundamentally change Culver's.
It would. It would make the experience a lot different, and it wouldn't make it as quaint and homey. I mean, we've all been inside of a Culver's. There's nothing like a Culver's where you walk in and it's three people at registers, nine people walking behind them filling orders. It's bustling.
It is.
It's crackling with energy in there. And if you got rid of those individuals, it wouldn't be the same experience.
I don't like the AI. I don't like this trend toward... I was in a restaurant.
I don't like the AI.
I know, and I'm old and cranky, but I was in a restaurant last month, and it had one of those robot waiters that bring your food. That scared the crap out of me. I thought it was going to crash into my table. It's like, go away. And then you still have to have a person come and take it off the off the robot. That seems kind of redundant.
I think it's more for, I think I went to a restaurant in Atlanta that did that.
I don't like it.
Okay. I didn't really care either way. I just thought it was funny because it was just like, it looked like an upside down wastebasket with shelves and just, you know, bringing us our food. But, and then someone had to come take the food off of it.
Well,
and,
exactly. Yeah. So what is the point of that?
I think that is more about the novelty of it rather than, because the thing is, it's not getting rid of staff.
No.
It's just, I think it's that.
Because it's to cute?
Me, yeah, to me, that's more for fun. It's not like you have like a robot waiter who's, you know, opens up his chest and inside is your food and then he puts it out with his arms and everything. You know, it's, that to me seems like more like fun. But the one, you know, when I thought about this, Culver's and many other fast food places, restaurants, they provide an opportunity for young people to have their first jobs. They provide older people an opportunity to maybe have part-time something in retirement.
Yeah.
Those who are coming off of hard times, whether it's coming out of prison, those places will give
those entry-level jobs.
Exactly. And when I listen to pundits whine and complain when we talk about minimum wage, like, well, these jobs aren't forever. Well, some of these jobs are people's only options. And I don't want to get into a minimum wage discussion, but if we replace those jobs with machines, then where does that kid go in high school to earn extra money to help pay for a car or whatever? There's no more paperboy jobs left.
Right.
If we get rid of fast food jobs, those are gone. What's left? Entry level at Amazon? No, that's not a thing that's going to happen.
That was one of my first. I started babysitting when I was 11.
Yeah.
My first job in the workforce was at an A&W.
Yeah. 12 years old, I had a paper route until I was 14. Then I started working at Michael's, an Italian restaurant, washing dishes. If they get rid of those jobs, then where are those kids going to get that first sense of accomplishment and working that we talk about so much, like kids are lazy. Well, if they can't get an entry-level job, yeah, then they're going to be living with you forever.
I love Culver's. I think it's fantastic. And I love Craig Culver's attitude about this. He just doesn't want to get rid of the human element.
No.
Within his restaurants. And I think in so many aspects of our life, we're losing that.
Yes.
With communications by text and all these other electronic mm-hmm. ways we have of communicating each other. It's nice to see someone and look them in the eye and say, onion rings, please.
And could you make sure that in that onion ring, you could just like maybe two crinkle fries get in there? Because it's just such a lovely thing. When you open up the onion ring, Calvin, am I wrong? Am I wrong, Calvin? You open up the onion rings and you're like, there's some crinkle fries.
It's
fry.
Like a bonus.
It's just, ooh, I feel like it got away with something, Calvin.
I don't know.
Of course you don't.
The fries at Culver's are like by far and away the worst thing on their menu.
Well, enjoy, folks. That was the last day Calvin's been on the show. He doesn't.
He can have opinions on fries.
He has opinions on bacon. What is your favorite fries? What are your favorite fries? Oh God,
he's got to think about it.
What did I do?
It's you know.
I mean, McDonald's has really classic fries.
Yeah, they're fine.
I like Wendy's fries.
Wendy's fries are really good. They're the closest thing that any fast food joint has, which is my favorite, which is steak fries. I love steak fries.
No, those are too thick.
Well, fine, more for me.
Sorry, see, we all have very opinionated opinions on French fries.
But I'm correct. Point is, so you like Wendy's fries. Jane, what do you like?
I like McDonald's fries.
Really? Okay. Mm-hmm. I used to like Burger King fries a lot because they were a little crispier, but I don't think they make those. Burger King, to me, I don't even understand how they're still in business.
Dave from New Berlin texting in says, free labor is unethical. I refuse to use self-checkout unless I'm getting paid. Dave from New Berlin. The one thing I do like about self-checkout is if I only have five things.
Yeah.
And then I will use the self-checkout. But I can remember a while ago when I was at a different radio station and we had people calling in talking about their favorite checkout ladies.
Yes.
And that's why they would go to that particular grocery store.
Yep. That's all gone now. Like, it's, you know, you
that
go
kind of personal... That
yeah.
personal touch, that personal interaction.
Now these, I mean, they're all basically, there's like two grocery stores now. There's everything under Kroger's and Woodman's. And there's nothing wrong with that, but it's not about that personal touch anymore. It's about, you know, we got a Metro Market here. We got a Pick and Save here. And get in, get out, do your thing, move on. That's it. There's no connection to the, you know, even though Woodman's has a beautiful Wisconsin-based history that I think is celebrating their anniversary right now, It's just, yeah, it's that stuff is, I'm unfortunately gone. Do you want to start a grocery store, Jane?
Oh, good heavens,
no. Would you like to start a grocery store?
Although I did always want to have my own cash register to play with that. I always thought that that would be fun. You know, you play grocery store. Okay, I'm way older than you guys. Forget it.
I know what a register is and a grocery store. I've had that inept.
Calvin?
Yeah, I mean, I think we had a toy register when I was a kid. I never actually worked a job with a register, though. My first job was a dietary aid at an assisted living center.
So wow.
Dang, you started. You started big. I mean.
So I brought food to the old people.
Oh.
Were you preparing it or were you just an aide?
I was just an aide. When I was in college, then I became a cook. But when I was in high school, I was just an aide.
So you've never worked a register-based job?
Nope.
That's interesting. Interesting, interesting.
Well, Culver's isn't getting rid of their bodies anytime soon.
And that's great.
Is a good thing, according to Craig Culver and an interview in the Cap Times. Thank you for that, the Cap Times. All right. This Shouldn't Be a Thing is on the way.
Big Bear Edition.
Big Bear Edition. Don't miss it. We'll be right back. You're listening to Matt Nair on Air. This is the Civic Media Radio Network.
Well, I don't know what to do with myself. Just don't know what to do with myself. Everything for two. Do everything with you. And now that we're through, I just don't know what to do. Like a summer rose.
Make it stop. Good morning. Welcome back to Matt Nair on Air. Jane Matt Nair, Greg Bach, and the Calvinator on the board coming to you from our studio in downtown Waukesha. You can join us. Call, text 855-752-4842. Leave a comment on the live stream on Facebook, YouTube, and what used to be Twitter. President Biden in town in Milwaukee today. Talking about investing in getting rid of lead lines, courtesy of the bipartisan infrastructure law. He will be making a speech. They're going to try and grab that during Todd Alba's show around 12:30. Todd, of course, right after the noon news here on Civic Media. Right now, though, 11:52, that means it is time for...
This Shouldn't Be a Thing.
We wrap up the show every day with This Shouldn't Be a Thing today. It's the Big Bear Edition, Greg Bach.
For Mark Lanza and Mark Chow, running into wildlife is no, it's a common occurrence because they live in Monrovia, California.
Okay, they're in California.
Yeah, they're in California. And they decided one night, I guess they're horror movie fans, and they started watching a film called Pooh, Blood, and Honey. Winnie the Pooh, Blood and Honey.
Which also should not be a thing.
Yeah, we've talked about that before. So Winnie the Pooh came into public domain, a version of it. So now you can use it at will.
And they made a horror movie.
They made a disgusting horror movie. Like, people either love it or hate it. And apparently they hated it so much, they're making a second one.
Oh, man.
But Mark and Mark were sitting down for an evening.
Watching that movie.
Apparently, they hadn't eaten, because you don't watch that movie after you eat.
All right.
And they said, while we were watching the movie, we thought it was part of the soundtrack. We heard something, and we rewound it, and it wasn't. We were hearing pounding.
Oh, gosh. And they thought it was coming from the film, and it's not.
Exactly. Basically, they stopped the movie, they went and looked around, and they realized something was under the house.
God.
It wasn't Winnie the Pooh Bear. It was a 350-pound brown bear that was coming out of their window in the basement. Yeah. And let me tell you something, folks. I know we're supposed to be scared of bears. I get it. They're scary. They're big. This is a cute bear. This is a very cute bear. I just wanted to pet it.
Did it happily walk away, or was it camping?
It was chased away. Everyone's fine. No one was hurt. No one was injured. I think they got a broken window, But that's the least of your worries when a 350-pound bear enters your domicile while you're watching a movie about a murderous bear and a murderous piglet. That's the thing is, like, I would probably be scared if a bear got into my house, but I think I would never, the notion of like the connection between the movie and the happenings, that's a new level of terror.
Absolutely.
That you'll be dreaming about for the rest of your life.
Absolutely. I would have run screaming.
Yeah. I think I would have been scared too. I would have run away too, but also like I said, you watch it on the video and that bear, you just want to boop its nose.
Well, because they're kind of lumbery and stuff, yeah, and all of that. Yeah. Until they're chasing you up a tree.
All right.
Just saying.
My gosh. I guess Jane thinks bears shouldn't be a thing.
No, I'm cool with bears, just not under my house or near my house or near me.
So 350-pound bears invading your home while you're watching Winnie the Pooh, Blood and Honey is definitely this should not be a thing.
Absolutely. That is an excellent, excellent example of what should not be. If you ever have a thing that shouldn't be, we would love to hear about it. Send it to Jane Says, JaneSays, Jane Says at civicmedia.us. That is today's episode of
This Shouldn't Be a Thing.
And thank you to Todd Michaels for putting that together, too. We had so much fun with it.
Did you know that you can listen to separate episodes of This Shouldn't Be a Thing now? There's only a couple on there. But you can actually download this segment on our website, civicmedia.us/shows.
We have new pictures up.
Oh, we look like a radio team. Oh, yeah. Oh my goodness. Like, look wistful and mischievous. Oh, man.
And fun.
Yeah. So you can download the show as the podcast, or you can, and you can download This Shouldn't Be a Thing as a mini pod. I would call it a mini show because it's only about 8 minutes long. It's a lot of fun. It's that last section of the show, but, you know, show it to your friends. Get on board.
Have some fun with it.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Coming up tomorrow, Brittany Merlot, Civic Media meteorologist, will be joining us. Dr. Laura Hanks will be here,
yes,
for a public service announcement. She wasn't able to join us the last couple of weeks, so we have some catching up to do with Dr. Hanks' public service announcement as well. If you have a medical issue or a question, you can email that to the same email address, janesays@civicmedia.us. And Greg, I believe there is a new super PAC out there that has a new political ad that is going to be debuting on our program tomorrow.
Oh, Mother Glory.
Yeah. I'm not sure. I've never heard of this particular super PAC before. Sounds a little bit different than the last one.
I would be very worried about like your home location in Google Maps. You get a lot of calls and packages from super PACs.
Odd drop-offs.
Yeah.
But it'll all be good.
Of course. What could go wrong?
What could go wrong? News is coming up next, followed by Todd Alba from noon to 2 p.m., Maggie Dawn from 2 to 4, Dom Salvia from 4 to 6, and Pete Schwabba with Nightlight from 6 to 8 p.m. Thank you, Greg and Calvin and all of our engineers. Without you guys, nothing works. And thank you most of all for calling and for texting and for listening. It means the world. I hope you find some joy today. Get outside. It's so nice. And have the chance to share it. Have a great day. We'll see you in the morning. News is next, right here on the Civic Media Radio Network.
The national news cycle never stops, but it can be hard to find news about your local community. Civic Media is dedicated to providing quality local and state news coverage across Wisconsin. With the Civic Media app, you can get notifications about local stories that matter to you and your community. Find the free Civic Media app in your phone's app store and choose notifications from the menu to tell us what kind of news you want to hear about.